Hammer Film Production. Peter Cushing in Dracula. Also starring Michael Goff and Melissa Stribling, with Christopher Lee as Dracula. And Carol Marsh, Miles Mallison, John Van Eysen, Olga Dickey, George Benson, Charles Lloyd Pack, George Woodbridge. Screenplay by Jimmy Sangster, based on the novel by Bram Stoker. High walls rise up behind an austere-looking carved stone eagle. Stone lintels jut out from the walls, and a carved coat of arms adorns the space above a pair of ancient-looking timber doors. Beside somber-looking stone pillars, a short flight of steps runs down to a narrow door, with bars across its one small dark window. Inside, in the dimly lit crypt, sits a stone sarcophagus bearing the name Dracula. A spatter of blood appears on the nameplate, then grows as more drips down onto it from above. A red book, marked with the letters JH.
The Diary of Jonathan Harker, 3rd of May, 1885. At last, my long journey is drawing to its close. What the eventual end will be, I cannot foresee. But whatever may happen, I can rest secure that I will have done all in my power to achieve success. The last lap of my journey from the village of Klausenburg proved to be more difficult than I had anticipated, due to the reluctance on the part of the coach driver to take me all the way. However, as there was no other transport available, I was forced to travel the last few kilometers on foot before arriving at Castle Dracula. The castle appeared innocuous enough in the warm afternoon sun, and all seemed normal but for one thing. There were no birds singing. As I crossed the wooden bridge and entered the gateway, it suddenly seemed to become much colder, due no doubt to the icy waters of the mountain torrent I had just crossed. However, I deemed myself lucky to have secured this post, and did not intend to falter in my purpose.
Approaching the castle, Harker pauses under the carved stone eagle and turns around, noticing the narrow door to the crypt nearby. Continuing to the main building, Harker opens a door and steps into a grand hallway, where the dim candlelight from hanging chandeliers casts shadows across the flagstone floor. Passing through an ornately carved archway, Harker takes in the somber grandeur of his surroundings, then notices a shaft of light from a nearby doorway. He carries his bag and suitcase to the door, which stands ajar, then pushes it open and passes through into a large room resembling a medieval banqueting hall. Harker sets down his suitcase at the bottom of a flight of stairs that runs up to a galleried walkway. Looking around him, he makes his way over to a dark wooden dining table that stands before a large fireplace. As flames flicker in the grate, he places his briefcase and hat on the table, then picks up an envelope and reads the letter inside. "My dear Harker," it begins, "I'm sorry I was unable to meet you. Eat well, make yourself comfortable. Signed, Dracula." With an approving nod, Harker looks at the food that's been left out for him, then takes off his gloves. Later, he tosses another log onto the fire and glances around him. with one hand nonchalantly resting in his trouser pocket, and just the top button of his pale grey suit jacket done up, Harker steps back to the banqueting table and opens his briefcase. He takes out his diary and stationery set, then settles again on the chair at the head of the table, where a place had been laid for him. He pushes aside his supper plate, accidentally knocking it to the floor. Kneeling down, Harker's gathering up silver crockery when someone in a long, flowing gown steps up behind him. Becoming aware of their presence, he turns to find a glamorous, dark-haired woman with a kindly expression looking down at him. Harker gets to his feet and smiles.
I'm sorry I didn't hear you come in.
He puts his supper dish to one side.
My name's Jonathan Harker. I'm the new librarian.
You will help me, won't you? Say you will. Please.
How can I help you?
Get me away from here.
But why?
He's keeping me prisoner.
Who is? Count Dracula? I'm afraid I don't understand.
Oh, please. Please help me to escape.
She looks pleadingly into Harker's eyes, then he touches her hands, which are resting on his shoulders, and she pulls them away. Her expression hardens and she runs from the room. Harker looks around, then his eyes widen in surprise as he spots a black-cloaked figure at the top of the stairs. The grey-haired gentleman then descends towards him.
Mr. Harker, I'm glad that you've arrived safely.
Count Dracula.
I am Dracula, and I welcome you to my house. I must apologize for not being here to greet you personally, but I trust that you have found everything you needed.
Thank you, sir. It was most thoughtful.
It was the least that I could do after such a journey.
Yes, it is a long journey.
And tiring for you, no doubt. Permit me to show you to your room.
Thank you, sir.
Harker collects his diary and stationery, puts them in his briefcase, then picks up his hat and coat. As he's about to follow his host from the room, he stoops to pick up his suitcase.
Now, please, allow me. Unfortunately, my housekeeper is away at the moment. A family bereavement, you understand?
Yes, of course, sir.
However, I think you will find that everything has been prepared for your comfort.
How soon may I start work, sir?
As soon as you wish. There are a large number of volumes to be indexed.
Harker follows the count up a flight of steps towards an arch-shaped door. Inside, heavy curtains hang around a four-poster bed. Decanters and a chessboard stand on a side table, where Harker puts his briefcase.
Is there anything else you require, Mr. Harker?
No, I don't think so. You've been very kind.
On the contrary, it is entirely my privilege. I consider myself fortunate to have found such a distinguished scholar to act as my librarian.
I like quiet and seclusion. This house, I think, offers that.
Then we are both satisfied. An admirable arrangement. But there's just one more thing, Mr. Harker. I have to go out, and I will not be back until after sundown tomorrow. But until then, please look upon this house as your own. Good night, Mr. Harker.
Good night, sir.
Left alone, Harker approaches his briefcase, then pauses, shooting a look after his departed host, before taking it to a nearby desk. Opening the briefcase, he takes out a framed photo of a woman and smiles, setting it on top of the desk. After taking out his diary and stationery, Harker's sitting at the desk when there's a knock at the door and Dracula enters.
As I shall be away for so long, I think it better that you should have the key of the library, Mr. Harker.
Thank you.
You will find the library to the left of the hall. May I?
Yes, certainly.
Your wife?
No, my fiancée.
You're a very fortunate man, Mr. Harker. May I ask her name?
Lucy. Lucy Homewood.
Charming. Charming.
You're very kind.
Good night. Sleep well, Mr. Harker.
Harker turns back to the desk. Then a noise startles him. He rushes to the door to find it locked. He slumps slightly, his back against the door, then smiles stoically to himself and heads back to the desk. Harker sits down and takes out a pen, then pauses with his fist held to his mouth, collecting his thoughts, before writing in his diary.
At last I have met Count Dracula.
He looks up before continuing.
He accepts me as a man who has agreed to work among his books as I intended. It only remains for me now to await the daylight hours when, with God's help, I will forever end this man's reign of terror.
Dracula's cloaked figure strides through the shadows of a deserted street. Harker's dozing in a chair by a flickering fire when his door handle slowly turns. The door doesn't open, but awoken by the noise, Harker stares at the door handle, then gets to his feet. Looking alert and inquisitive, Harker crosses to a side table, his gaze fixed on the door. Then he creeps carefully towards it and tries the handle. It turns. Then he swiftly yanks the door open before stepping cautiously out onto the empty landing. He glances around, then closes the bedroom door behind him. Unbuttoning his jacket, Harker slips a hand in his trouser pocket and steps across the shadowy landing. Glancing downstairs, he spots a shaft of light coming from an open door, which then closes. He walks down the candlelit staircase, past wall-mounted animal heads and antique weaponry. Harker heads through the door at the bottom of the stairs into a large room, full of books. As he walks forward, the door closes slowly behind him, then he turns sharply to find the woman he met earlier standing with her back against it. She approaches.
Mr. Harker, you will help me?
If it's at all possible. But tell me, why is Count Dracula keeping you prisoner?
I cannot tell you that.
But if I'm to help you, I must know.
I'm sorry. It's not possible.
You make it very difficult for me. After all, I'm a guest here. If I'm to help you, I must have a reason.
Reason? You ask for a reason. Is it not reason enough that he keeps me locked up in this house? Holds me against my will? You can have no idea what an evil man he is. What terrible things he does. I could not, dare not try to leave on my own. He would find me again, I know. But with you to help me, I would have a chance. Oh, you must help me. You must. You're my only hope. You must.
I'll help you. I promise.
She rests her head on his shoulder.
Please don't distress yourself.
Thank you. Thank you.
She holds on to Harker, then slowly raises her gaze to his neck and opens her mouth to reveal sharp, white fangs. She aims a bite, then Harker pushes her away as Dracula appears at a doorway, his eyes red and blood dripping from his own fang-like teeth. After throwing the woman to the ground, Dracula faces her, then grabs her arm as she rushes at Harker again. As she tumbles to the floor, Harker grabs the Count from behind and they grapple. Dracula's grip tightens around Harker's throat as his red eyes stare down at him. Then he throws him to the floor and bears down on his attacker. As scream draws Harker's attention, and he looks up to see Dracula walking from the room with the woman lying limp in his arms. Dracula glances back at the doorway, then slips away, leaving Harker to collapse exhausted on the floor. In the morning light, snow-capped mountains rise up behind Dracula's castle. Inside, Harker's up in his room, sleeping fully clothed on the end of his bed. The last dying embers of a fire flicker in the grate as he dozes. Later, he stirs and slowly sits up. A smoke from a burnt-out candle dances up through the air. Harker looks around as if in a daze, then slowly gets to his feet while rubbing his face and feeling for his watch in his waistcoat pocket. He crosses to an ornate stained glass window and peers out before trying the bedroom door and finding it locked. He turns away from the door looking exhausted, then takes the lid off one of the decanters sitting on the side table. Harker puts it down without pouring any, then touches his blood-stained neck before hurrying over to his briefcase and taking out a mirror. He examines the teeth marks in his neck and the trickles of blood reaching down to his collar. Then he shuts his eyes in anguish. He slumps down onto his chair, bowing his head over his briefcase in despair. Numbly placing his briefcase on the floor, Harker glances up at Lucy's picture, then covers his face with his hands. Sliding open a drawer in the desk, he takes out his diary and opens his stationery case. With a careworn expression, he opens the book to a clean page, dips his pen into its inkwell, and begins to write.
I have become a victim of Dracula and the woman in his power. It may be that I am doomed to be one of them. If that is so, I can only pray that whoever finds my body will possess the knowledge to do what is necessary to release my soul. I have lost a day. Soon it will be dark. While my senses are still my own, I must do what I set out to do. I must find the resting place of Dracula and there end his existence forever.
Clutching a cloth bundle taken from his briefcase, Harker climbs out of a bedroom window. In the castle grounds, he hides his diary in a small shrine behind some flowers and a statuette.
Soon it will be sundown and they will walk again. I do not have much time.
Harker runs across the bridge towards the castle and stops under the carved stone eagle. Descending the steps, he glances over his shoulder outside the narrow door to the crypt, then opens it. Inside, Harker stands in the gloom at the top of a short stone stairway. Beneath him, Dracula's lying in an open-top sarcophagus, his eyes closed and traces of blood around his mouth. Harker descends the steps and stands over him before heading towards another stone coffin nearby. Peering in, he finds the woman, her lips red with blood and her chest gently rising and falling as she sleeps. Untying his bundle, Harker takes out a hammer and a sharp-tipped wooden stake. He gazes down at her face before placing the stake over her heart. Then the dim light throws Harker's shadow onto the wall, and he raises his arm and brings the hammer down. As he strikes the stake again, Dracula's eyes open. The Count's gaze shifts to the faint glow of the sun through a small window, which pales as night falls, and a malevolent grin creeps across his face. Slumped against the nearby sarcophagus, Harker looks down to find its occupant's beautiful face transformed into that of an old woman, with a stake through her bloodied chest. Harker glances over his shoulder towards Dracula's coffin, then makes his way wearily towards it, with his hammer and another wooden stake. His eyes widen in shock when he finds it empty. Slowly, Harker lifts his gaze towards the entrance, just in time to see the light from the barred window disappear before Dracula's cloaked form fills the doorway. Harker backs away, appearing transfixed with fear as the Count looms over him at the top of the stairs. As Harker backs himself up to a wall, Dracula closes the door, plunging the crypt into darkness. A sign swings gently in the breeze outside a local tavern. Inside, garlic and flowers hang from the rafters as customers drink and a music box plays. The landlord makes his way through the bar, takes a pinch of snuff, then leans on the music box as the sound of the front door draws all eyes towards it. A tall man in a coat and hat enters. The landlord turns off the music, then greets him.
Good day, sir.
Good day.
The stranger looks around as all the other customers watch him.
May I have a brandy, please?
Certainly, sir. Travelling far?
Not much farther, I hope.
He glances round at the other patrons, then produces a coin as the landlord pours him a drink.
Is it possible to have a meal?
Well, yes, sir. Inga! Only a simple one, I'm afraid, sir. Your change, sir.
Thank you.
We don't get many travellers in these parts. Not that stop, anyway.
You had one a few days ago, I believe. A Mr. Harker.
Harker, sir?
Yes. He's a friend of mine. He wrote to me from this address.
Not here, sir.
I remember the gentleman. He gave me a letter to post.
Hold your tongue, girl.
Was this the letter?
I'm not sure.
Perhaps you'll remember the name. Dr. Van Helsing.
I'm not sure.
Go and prepare a meal for this gentleman. At once, do you hear me?
Leaving the room, she does as she's told.
What are you afraid of?
I don't understand you.
Why all these garlic flowers? And over the window.
Van Helsing reaches up to the rafters.
And up here. They're not for decoration, are they?
I don't know what you're talking about.
I think you do. And I think you know something about my friend. He came here with a purpose, to help you.
We haven't asked for any help.
You need it all the same.
Look, sir, you're a stranger here in Klausenberg. Some things are best left alone, such as interfering in things which are beyond our powers.
Now, please don't misunderstand me. This is more than a superstition, I know. The danger is very real. If the investigation that Mr. Harker and I are engaged upon is successful, not only you, but the whole world will benefit. Castle Dracula is somewhere here in Klausenberg. Will you tell me how I get there?
You ordered a meal, sir. As an innkeeper, it's my duty to serve you. When you've eaten, I ask you to go and leave us in peace.
Your meal will be ready in a minute, sir, if you'd like to take a seat.
Thank you.
Inga follows Van Helsing to a table with a tray, then sets a place for him as he takes off his scarf and the other customers talk amongst themselves again.
This was found at the crossroads near that place. He told me to burn it. But your friend was such a nice gentleman, I couldn't.
She leaves. Then Van Helsing lifts his napkin to find Harker's diary. Looking thoughtful, he flicks through the handwritten pages. Later, two white horses are pulling a small carriage along a leaf-strewn track through woodland. Then it's outside Dracula's castle as Van Helsing gets out. He looks up at the sound of horses. Van Helsing stands to the side of the bridge as an undertaker's carriage leaves the castle, pulled by two brown horses and carrying a new white coffin. He watches it disappear up the road, then runs over the bridge towards the castle. Opening a door, Van Helsing steps into the gloom of the castle and looks around.
Harker?
Leaving the door open, he heads up a nearby staircase and calls out from the galleried walkway above.
Harker!
He glances back down the stairs before striding on.
Harker!
Harker's room is a mess, with books, papers, and bedclothes out of place.
Harker!
Van Helsing approaches and pushes open the door, which has been left ajar. He hurries through the room, taking in the dishevelled bed and misplaced possessions. Approaching the untidy desk, Van Helsing notices Harker's treasured photo frame on the floor. Picking it up, he finds the glass broken and the pictures of Lucy missing, with just one torn fragment left. Holding the remaining scrap of Lucy's picture, Van Helsing looks around the room with mounting concern. Outside, he walks towards the bridge, then stops and glances back at the entrance before turning to the side and noticing the small staircase leading to the crypt. Descending the steps, he pauses outside the narrow door and looks behind him, before heading inside. In the gloom, Van Helsing spots the sarcophagus with Harker's bundle of stakes still resting on the side. After finding the old woman with a stake through her heart, he wheels around to face the other sarcophagus, which now contains Harker. Van Helsing covers his face, then slowly drops his hand to see his friend's eyes closed and sharp fangs protruding from his half-open mouth. Van Helsing looks round, then finds Harker's hammer beside a sharpened wooden stake on the floor. Picking them up, he removes his hat and approaches Harker's sarcophagus, steeling himself as he stands over him. Later, Van Helsing's in the home of a well-dressed couple.
I'm sorry, Mr. Homewood, but I really cannot tell you anything more about how he died.
Cannot or will not?
Whichever you wish.
Dr. Van Helsing, I am not at all satisfied. You suddenly appear and tell us that Jonathan Harker is dead, and yet you will not tell us where or how he died. I find it extremely suspicious.
Arthur.
You had the death certificate?
Yes, signed by you.
When did he die, Doctor?
10 days ago, Mrs. Homewood.
10 days ago? Where was he buried?
He was cremated.
By whose authority?
His own. As his friend and colleague, he told me some time ago that he would wish it.
You must know that Jonathan was going to marry my sister Lucy. Surely you could have written.
I felt it would have been less of a shock if I came and told her personally.
I'd rather you didn't see my sister. My wife and I will tell her.
Very well. I'm sorry. Will you please express my sympathy to Miss Lucy? If she wishes to get in touch with me, I'm at her service.
Oh, Gerda, Dr. Van Helsing is leaving. Will you show him to the door?
Yes, sir.
Good day, sir.
As Van Helsing heads into the hallway and picks up his coat, the maid closes the doors, leaving the couple alone.
Why all this secrecy? Why wouldn't he tell us?
Oh, darling. Dr. Van Helsing's a very eminent man. Whatever his motives, you can be sure he had a good reason for them. In any case, we can't help poor Jonathan now. Lucy's the one we must think of.
Is she well enough to be told? It'll be a terrible blow for her.
She must know sometime. We won't disturb her afternoon rest. We'll see how she is this evening.
Jonathan will be home soon, I know it. Then I'll get better, you'll see. I won't be a trouble to Dr. Seward or any of you.
Lucy, you're no trouble to anyone. Now rest, get some sleep. You've got to get some color back into those cheeks. Good night, Lucy.
Good night, Mina. Good night, Arthur.
He joins Mina beside the bed and leans over to kiss Lucy goodnight. As she follows Arthur away from Lucy's bedside, Mina turns off a lamp on a small table.
Sleep well.
I'll try.
Left alone, Lucy's innocent expression changes. She sits up in bed, her eyes suddenly alert and expectant. Tossing aside the sheets, she gets out of bed and creeps quickly to the door. She presses her ear to the door and listens for a moment, before locking it. Approaching a pair of glazed doors, Lucy opens them and performs a little curtsy as the night air rushes in. She crosses the bedroom, an excited smile playing at the corners of her mouth. Lucy takes off the cross that's hanging around her neck and places it in her bedside table. Arranging her nightdress, Lucy lies back on the bed and gazes towards the open doors. As leaves blow in, she loosens her collar, exposing red bite marks on her neck. Van Helsing's at home, reading Harper's diary, while listening to a recording.
Research on vampires. Certain basic facts established. One, light. The vampire allergic to light. Never ventures forth in the daytime. Sunlight fatal. Repeat, fatal. Would destroy them. Two, garlic. Vampires repelled by odor of garlic. Memo. Check final arrangements with Harker before he leaves for Klausenburg. Three. The crucifix. Symbolizing the power of good over evil. The power of the crucifix in these cases...
Come in.
You rang, sir?
Oh, yes. I want this letter delivered first thing in the morning. Will you see to that?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Anything the matter? What is it?
Well, sir, to tell you the truth, when I was outside, I thought I heard you talking to someone.
Well, of course you did. I was talking to myself. You won't forget that letter, will you?
No, sir. Yes, sir.
The man leaves, staring back over his shoulder at Van Helsing as he goes. Left alone, Van Helsing turns the recording back on and picks up Harker's diary.
The power of the crucifix in these cases is twofold. It protects the normal human being, but reveals the vampire or victim of this vile contagion when in advanced stages.
After making notes in the diary, Van Helsing puts it down and flicks a switch. He adjusts the controls on the recorder, then picks up a microphone and begins speaking into it.
Established that victims consciously detest being dominated by vampirism, but are unable to relinquish the practice. Similar to addiction to drugs. Ultimately, death results from loss of blood. But unlike normal death, no peace manifests itself, for they enter into the fearful state of the undead. Since the death of Jonathan Harker, Count Dracula, the propagator of this unspeakable evil, has disappeared. He must be found and destroyed.
Count Dracula appears at the double doors leading to Lucy's bedroom. She looks up at him from the bed, her chest heaving. She sits up slightly, then he walks purposefully into the room. As Dracula nears the bed, the light catches his bare teeth. Then he looms over Lucy, who watches his advance, as if spellbound. The Count raises his cloak like a shroud as he leans towards her. Later, a doctor leaves Lucy's bedroom with Mina, who's holding a letter.
She seems so much weaker, Doctor.
It's a puzzling case, Mrs. Homewood. The symptoms are those of anemia, and I'm treating her for this. It can be a slow process, of course. But I had hoped for more encouraging signs by now.
Please, may I see Auntie Lucy?
Not today, Tanya.
Is she very ill?
I'm afraid so.
Do you know what's wrong with her?
Of course I do.
Then why don't you make her better?
Tanya! Tanya! How many times have I told you not to go bothering Mrs. Homewood? I'm sorry, ma'am.
That's all right, Gerda.
A child's logic can be most disconcerting.
Yes.
Would you like a second opinion, Mrs. Homewood?
Thank you, Doctor. I'll think about it.
Well, carry on with the medicine and diet I've prescribed, and plenty of fresh air.
Yes, Doctor, I will. Good day to you.
Good day.
After the doctor has left, Mina reads the letter she's been holding. Van Helsing's at home, packing a bag and putting Harker's diary in his pocket, when there's a knock at the door.
Come in. Mrs. Homewood, how very good of you to come. Please, will you sit down?
Thank you. You mentioned in your letter some things of Jonathan's.
Yes, I have them ready. I would have brought them myself, but...
Oh, I do understand. But you must appreciate... Mr. Holmwood was very upset.
Of course. I only wish I could have been more helpful. How did Miss Lucy take the news?
We haven't told her yet. She's ill, very ill.
I'm sorry to hear that. May I ask what's the matter with her?
It was all so sudden. Happened about 10 days ago. Our family doctor says it's anemia. But I'm very unhappy about it. Oh, I've nothing against Dr. Seward. Please don't think that, but... Well, he did say I could have a second opinion.
I'd like to see her at once.
Oh, I'd be so grateful.
If you'll excuse me.
Lucy, I brought someone to see you. Dr. Van Helsing, he's a friend of Jonathan's.
Miss Lucy.
He takes her hand.
What lovely flowers.
Jonathan's dead, isn't he? It's true, isn't it?
I'm sorry.
Did Arthur tell you?
Nobody told me. I just knew. Is that why Dr. Helsing's here?
Partly.
Dr. Helsing's a specialist. He's come to help you.
Jonathan's told me so many things about you.
Oh, nice things, I hope.
Very nice.
Now, let's see.
He moves her head to one side.
Here.
Moving her head again, his expression falters briefly as he notices the bite marks on her neck.
Now, don't you worry. We'll soon have you well again.
Goodbye, Doctor. I'm sorry you've had a wasted journey. About Jonathan, I mean.
It wasn't wasted, I promise you. Good day, Miss Lucy.
Lucy watches him go. Then Van Helsing's with Mina outside the room.
How could she have known of Jonathan's death?
Premonition. It's not uncommon.
She took it so calmly. It worries me.
I'm afraid there are more urgent things to worry about. Those marks on her neck. When did they first appear?
Well, I noticed them first shortly after she became ill. I asked her about them and she said she thought she'd been stung. Which is quite possible, of course. Dr. Seward said she must have plenty of fresh air. Windows were open all the time.
Between the hours of sunset and sunrise, all the windows in her room, with the possible exception of a small fanlight for ventilation, must be kept shut.
Oh, but Dr. Seward said...
Mrs. Holmwood, you called me in for a second opinion. If I am to help your sister-in-law, there are certain things you must do to help me. However unorthodox they may appear.
Yes, I know, but...
Madam, if you love Miss Lucy, be guided by me, I beg you.
I'll do anything to make her well again.
No. You must get some garlic flowers, as many as you can. Place them by her windows and her door and by her bedside. They may be taken out during the day, but under no circumstances, even if the patient implores you, must they be removed at night. I cannot impress upon you strongly enough how important it is that you obey my instructions. Do exactly as I say, and we may be able to save her. If you don't, she will die. I'll be here in the morning.
Later, Lucy's lying in a state of distress, her tortured gaze flitting between two vases of garlic flowers placed either side of the bed. With great effort, she pulls herself up to a sitting position. Lucy leans over and knocks one of the vases off the bedside table it's standing on. Gerda rushes in.
Heavens, child, what is it?
Oh, Gerda, these flowers, I can't stand them.
They do smell strongly, Miss, but Mrs. Holmwood said that...
I don't care what she said. Please take them away, please.
Well...
Please, Gerda. They stifle me.
All right, miss. I'll take them out.
And the windows. You'll open the windows?
Yes, Miss Lucy, if that's what you want.
Gerda settles Lucy back on her pillow, then moves two vases of flowers that have been placed in front of the double doors that lead outside. Lucy watches as Gerda opens the doors.
I'll come back for the rest.
Left alone, Lucy breathes heavily, eyeing the open doors with a mixture of eager anticipation and foreboding. In the night sky, dark clouds move in front of the moon. In the morning light, Dr. Seward covers Lucy's lifeless features with a sheet, then turns to Mina, who's been comforted by Arthur.
There was nothing I could do to save her.
A tearful Gerda comes in with a calling card on a silver tray, which Arthur reads. Van Helsing enters, exchanges a brief glance with Arthur, then heads to the bed and lifts the sheet to look at Lucy. Dr. Seward addresses him afterwards.
Dr. Van...
Van Helsing silences him.
Mrs. Holmwood, did you do as I told you?
She did. And you've seen the result.
But Arthur, dear...
Please, sir. Excuse me, sir. It was all my fault. She could not breathe. She looked so ill, she begged me to open the windows and throw away all the plants. Oh, I know you told me not to, remember that.
Gerda, what time was this?
It was about midnight. I heard a noise and I...
All right, good. You may go now.
Yes, sir. Thank you, sir. Oh, I am so sorry, sir.
Arthur to Van Helsing.
Whatever happened, all I know is that you've brought us nothing but grief. First Jonathan and now Lucy. Whoever you are and whatever your motives, please go and leave us in peace.
Mr. Holmwood. When I told you about Jonathan, I thought it better for your peace of mind to spare the details of the dreadful circumstances in which he died. But the tragic death of your sister is so closely linked with Jonathan's that I think you should now know the truth. I can't expect you to believe me, but you will, I know, believe Jonathan. Here are his last words, his diary. When you have read it, you will understand.
He nods a farewell, leaving Harker's diary on a side table, which Arthur eyes with a frown. Later, Arthur's standing in his living room with a cup and saucer, as Mina's busy with some embroidery nearby. He puts down his drink to comfort his wife, then Gerda comes in.
Well, what is it, Gerda?
It's a policeman, sir. He's got Tanya with him.
Tanya?
Show him in, Gerda.
Very good, sir.
The policeman comes in, holding the girl's hand.
Good evening, ma'am. Good evening, sir.
What is it, officer?
I found this little girl here. She was very distressed indeed. Tell them what you told me.
I don't want to.
Oh, Tanya. There's no need to be frightened. Now come on over here, sit with me and tell me all about it. Oh. Now you don't want Mr. Holmwood to think you're a crybaby, do you? You're a big girl now. Now come on. Tell me what happened.
Well, I was out by myself, and she came up to me, and she said, "Hello, Tanya, shall we go for a little walk?" And I said, "Yes," and we went for a walk. And then someone came along, and she ran away and left me, and I was lost.
Now, who was she? Who did you see? Come on, tell me. Who was she?
Aunt Lucy.
The weight of her revelation registers on Arthur's face. Later, mist clings to the aging headstones in a graveyard. Arthur picks his way through the dark with a lantern, pausing briefly outside the shadowy entrance to a mausoleum. Inside, he raises the lantern and cautiously approaches an open-topped sarcophagus. Stepping closer, he finds it empty, a velvet cushion where Lucy's head should be. Arthur looks up, his suspicions confirmed. Finger-like twigs move in the breeze as Tanya picks her way, barefoot, along a woodland path in her nightdress. Brushing past the branches and briars, she speaks up.
I heard you call me, Aunt Lucy.
Yes, dear. Come along.
You're cold. Where are we going?
For a little walk. I know somewhere nice and quiet where we can play.
Wearing a long white robe, Lucy takes Tanya's hand and leads her away through the trees. Outside the mausoleum, Arthur holds the lapels of his overcoat together against the night air and looks around. Suddenly, he spots Lucy and Tanya approaching through the misty graveyard. They stop walking a short way from the mausoleum.
Is it much further, Aunt Lucy? I'm so tired.
Nearly there, my darling.
Lucy!
The moonlight catches her fangs.
Arthur, dear brother.
Lucy!
Dear Arthur. Why didn't you come sooner? Come, let me kiss you.
She's halted by Van Helsing with a silver cross, which he presses to her forehead. Arthur clutches his face in horror as a cross-shaped burn is etched into Lucy's forehead. She looks up at Van Helsing in terror, then runs into the mausoleum. Van Helsing lays a comforting hand on a shell-shocked Arthur, then puts his coat around Tanya.
Put this on.
I want to go home.
And so you shall. I'll just go and fetch Mr. Homer, and then we can all go home together.
Not Aunt Lucy.
No, not Aunt Lucy. Now you sit there. Here, good girl. There. You look like a teddy bear now. Will you wear this pretty thing? There. Isn't that lovely? Now you promise not to run away.
I promise.
Good. Now look. If you watch over there, you'll see the sun come up. Keep warm.
He leaves Tanya holding his silver cross, then finds Arthur, who's standing by Lucy's coffin as she sleeps inside it. He turns away and covers his face as Van Helsing enters the mausoleum.
You understand now.
But why Lucy?
Because of Jonathan. You read my note in his diary about the woman he found at Klausenburg. This is Dracula's revenge. Lucy is to replace that woman.
Oh, no.
I've watched her tomb each night since she was interred 3 days ago, the night she ventured out for the first time. Homeward, I know your one wish is that Lucy should rest in peace. I promise to fulfill that wish. But first, if I have your consent, she can lead us to Dracula.
How can you suggest such a thing? That she should be possessed by this evil for another second? And what about Gerda's child out there? And the others she will defile. Oh, no, I couldn't.
He looks away. Then Van Helsing glances at Lucy.
Of course. Will you take that child home and then meet me back here in about an hour's time? That's all right. Nearly dawn. She won't leave the coffin again.
Later, Van Helsing unwraps a hammer and a bundle of wooden stakes. He picks one up, then Arthur stops him with a hand on his arm.
Is there no other way? But it's horrible.
Please try and understand. This is not Lucy, the sister you loved. It's only a shell, possessed and corrupted by the evil of Dracula. Liberate her soul and give it eternal peace. We must destroy that shell for all time. Believe me, there is no other way.
With his stake and hammer in hand, Van Helsing approaches Lucy's sarcophagus, then turns and looks back at Arthur. Turning back to Lucy, Van Helsing holds the sharpened wooden stake over her heart, then raises his arm and brings the hammer down. Arthur clutches himself as Van Helsing drives the stake into Lucy's chest. Wide-eyed, she shakes her head wildly as he brings the hammer down again. Then her eyes close, and her terror-stricken expression becomes calm. Arthur leans against a wall, his back turned towards Van Helsing, who looks down at Lucy with bloodied hands. Van Helsing steps away from the coffin, sets down the hammer and wipes his hands. He lays a comforting palm on Arthur's shoulder, ushering him back towards Lucy. As Arthur approaches, his careworn expression changes to surprise. All traces of the vampire are gone from Lucy's features. Seeing her at peace, a relieved smile dawns on Arthur's face. Later, Van Helsing's at home, making a drink for Arthur, as he sits nearby with Harker's diary.
Drink this.
Oh, I'm all right now.
Drink it.
Thanks.
Arthur drains the glass.
There's so much in Jonathan's diary I don't understand. Can Dracula really be as old as it says here?
We believe it's possible. Vampires are known to have gone on from century to century. Records showed that Count Dracula could be 500 or 600 years old.
Another thing. I always understood that if there were such things, they could change themselves into bats or wolves.
That's a common fallacy. Homewood, the study of these creatures has been my life's work. I've carried out research with some of the greatest authorities in Europe, and yet we've only just scratched the surface. You see, a great deal is known about the vampire bat. But details of these reanimated bodies of the dead, the undead, as we call them, are so obscure that many biologists will not believe they exist. Of course, you're shocked and bewildered. How can you expect to understand in so short a time? But you've read and experienced enough to know that this unholy cult must be wiped out. I hope, perhaps, that you'll help me.
I'll do anything you say.
Thank you. Of course, we do know certain things. You witnessed one a little while ago. And we also know that during the day, the vampire must rest in his native soil. Now, when I went to Castle Dracula, a hearse came tearing through the gates. In that hearse was a coffin. I believe it contained Dracula and a bed of his own earth. To get here, that hearse would have to come by the frontier at Ingstadt. They'll have a record there of where it was going. We need that address. Will you come with me to Ingstadt?
How long will it take? I must let Mina know.
With any luck, we should be back by tomorrow morning.
Arthur picks up his coat. Then he and Van Helsing are in the office on the frontier, speaking with an official who coughs.
I'm afraid that is quite out of the question, sir, against regulation.
All we want to know is where the coffin was going.
I cannot give away information without proper authority.
This is a matter of great urgency. I am a doctor.
I'm sorry, sir.
There's a young lad with a message for you. Personally said he wouldn't give it to me.
All right, Gerda, I'll see him.
Mina heads out into the hallway and finds a young man in a cap and coat standing on her doorstep.
Yes?
You, Mrs. Homewood?
I am.
Got a message for you. You're to go to 49 Friedrichstrasse right away, he says. And you're not to tell anyone.
Who says?
Arthur Homewood, he calls himself. Said you'd know him.
It's impossible. My husband's gone to Ingstadt.
Not if he gave me this message, he hasn't. And he gave me this message. Good night.
You've got to have permission from the ministry in writing. But I have my orders and I must obey them. It is laid down in the government regulations that under no circumstances...
Arthur produces
under
cash.
Under no circumstances may an unauthorized person be permitted to examine. Of course, in the case of an emergency, we do sometimes make an exception. And seeing this gentleman is a doctor...
he finds a ledger.
When did you say it was, sir?
December the 1st.
Oh, December the 1st. Klausenberg to Karlstadt. Let me see. Oh, here it is. One hearse, one coffin. J. Marx, 49 Friedrichstrasse, Karlstadt.
Mina's at the same address, ringing the doorbell under a sign that reads J. Marx, Undertaker and Mortician. Hugging her cloak around her against the night air, she approaches a nearby door that stands ajar, a shaft of light creeping under it.
Arthur?
She pulls open the door and steps into a storeroom containing coffins on stands.
Arthur?
Descending a short flight of steps into the shadowy storeroom, Mina looks around. Amongst all the brown coffins, there's a white one. Slowly, fingers slide the lid open from the inside, revealing Dracula's face. Then Arthur's at home.
Are you sure I can't get you anything to eat, sir?
No, thank you, Gerda. We haven't time. But I would like a word with Mrs. Homewood before we go. Would you go up, please, and see if she's awake yet?
Yes, sir.
Gerda leaves. Then Van Helsing finishes his drink and looks at Arthur.
Are you ready?
Arthur nods. Then Van Helsing follows him out into the hallway, where Gerda joins them, looking concerned.
She's not there, sir.
Not there?
No, sir.
Good morning.
Mina appears.
Mina, you gave me quite a fright. Where have you been at this hour of the morning?
It was such a lovely day. I got up early and went for a walk in the garden.
I didn't expect you back so soon.
I'm afraid I've got to go out again.
Oh. When will you be back?
I can't say for sure. Mina, you look pale. Are you all right?
Arthur, darling, don't fuss. I feel perfectly well. Goodbye, darling.
Arthur kisses her forehead. Then a smiling Mina watches him leave, holding the fur collar of her cloak together with an ungloved hand. Sunlight falls on the sign outside J. Marks, Undertaker and Mortician, casting a shadow on the wall behind. Arthur and Van Helsing step into the storeroom, followed by a man in a smart black suit and top hat.
Perhaps you'd better let me lead the way. I know these steps. They can be dangerous. We don't want to have an accident, do we? No, we don't. You know, an old man came here once to see his dear departed, and he fell down these stairs. It was quite amusing. He came to pay his last respects, and he remained to share them. Quite amusing, yes. What really? Now, where are we? Where are we? Where are we? Where are we? Yeah, well, I see it's round at the back somewhere. Well, it's been here as long. It's bound to be at the back, isn't it? Come on, this way, gentlemen, you follow me. I know where it was. This way.
An empty stand.
Well, this is an extraordinary thing. It was there, I know it was, because I saw it only yesterday. But I really don't understand who could have moved it.
Mina's doing embroidery at home, while Arthur talks with Van Helsing.
The driver of the hearse might have lied to the frontier official about where he was going.
Yes, but that fellow at the morgue wasn't lying. He was really surprised when he saw the coffin wasn't there. He must have had it sometime. I think he's still somebody here in Karlstadt.
But where? This is a big town.
There are not many places he can hide, don't forget.
There is that, of course.
What are you two being so mysterious about over there?
We'll be with you in a moment, my darling.
There is an old, neglected graveyard about 3 miles from here, somewhere in this area. St. Joseph's. Mm-hmm. Just one moment.
He holds a cross.
Mina, my dear, don't think I'm being silly, but I'd feel much happier if during my absence you'd wear this for me. Please don't ask me why, but just wear it for my sake.
Arthur,
Please, Mina.
He drops the cross onto her outstretched palm and she stands before dropping to the floor with her eyes closed. Rushing to help, Arthur lifts Mina into a sitting position as Van Helsing feels her forehead. Then he prizes open the fist in which she's holding the cross to find its imprint burnt onto her palm. Two men share a look, then later, they're solemnly descending the steps from Mina's bedroom. Arthur turns to Van Helsing.
You said Lucy would lead us to Dracula. Why didn't I listen to you? This would never have happened.
You mustn't blame yourself for that, but you must have the courage to let Mina lead us now. We'll give her every protection we can. Tonight we'll watch the windows of her room. They face two sides of the house, don't they?
Yes.
I know I ask a great deal of you, but you mustn't weaken now. We have it within our power to rid the world of this evil. And with God's help, we'll succeed.
He places the cross and chain in Arthur's hand. Nighttime. A light shines in an upstairs window as Van Helsing picks his way through the trees outside Arthur's house. He stops and looks around. Nearby, Arthur's patrolling the grounds, holding the cross he gave Mina in his hand. He looks up at her window and breathes a heavy sigh. Inside, Mina walks through the house in her nightdress. She approaches a window, moves the lace curtain a little, and looks out. Leaving the window, Mina crosses to a door and opens it. Stepping onto a landing, her gaze falls on the cloaked figure of Dracula, looking up at her from the hallway below. He walks slowly towards Mina, his unfaltering stare fixed upon her. Mina's lip quivers as she watches Dracula approach with uncertain eyes, backing away into the bedroom as his shadow looms over her. After shutting the door, the Count bears down on Mina, backing her to the bed. She sits staring up at him with wide eyes as he bares his teeth. Bending swiftly, he clasps her face with his hand, then his lips shift downwards across the contours of her features, past her now closed eyes. Mina lies back as Dracula leans closer, towards her neck. Arthur turns in a panic, then spots an owl screeching in a tree and runs his hand through his hair, looking relieved. Glancing up at Mina's window, he smiles and heads off through the trees. Arthur and Van Helsing enter the house and start taking off their coats.
Mina's safe now, but we must keep watch again tonight. You'd better get some rest.
Oh, what about you?
I'll be all right in there, if I may.
Right. I'll get you a rug for my room.
Thank you.
Van Helsing puts his coat down as Arthur heads upstairs. Van Helsing runs to her room where she's lying across the bed, her eyes closed and blood trickling from bite marks on her neck. Later, Arthur's lying back with his shirt sleeve rolled up and a tube inserted in his arm under a bandage. Mina's lying motionless in bed, a tube in her forearm as well, as Van Helsing stands between them, performing a blood transfusion, with Gerda standing by. Van Helsing smiles at Arthur, picks up some scissors, and cuts the bandages from his arm. He moistens some cotton wool from a bottle that Gerda's holding, and lifts the now loose bandage. Arthur grimaces as Van Helsing pulls the tube from his arm, placing its end in a bowl on a bedside table and holding the cotton wool over the wound. He then bends Arthur's arm at the elbow so his fist rests against his shoulder.
Just sit still like that for a minute.
Arthur does as he's told, while Van Helsing turns to Mina and cuts the bandages around her forearm. Putting down the scissors, he moistens more cotton wool.
Thank you.
Holding the cotton wool over the wound, Van Helsing removes the tube from Mina's arm as Arthur looks on.
Will she be all right?
I think so.
The doctor folds Mina's arm at the elbow and turns to Arthur again.
Let me see your arm. Steady. All right.
He checks Arthur's arm.
Yes, yes, it's very good. Now you need plenty of fluid, tea, coffee, or better still, wine. Go down and have some now. There's a good fellow.
Arthur gets up, rolls his sleeve down, and collects his jacket from the bedpost, then watches Van Helsing with Mina.
Don't worry, Gerda and I will take care of her.
Arthur leaves the room. Then Van Helsing puts his hand on Mina's forehead and examines the bite to her neck before turning to Gerda.
Just bathe her forehead, will you, Gerda? Some eau de cologne or something?
Yes, sir.
Gerda heads off, Then Van Helsing empties the remaining contents of the transfusion tubes into a jar of water, which turns red. Downstairs, Arthur's sitting in an armchair with a drink when Van Helsing comes in.
How is she now?
She's reacted very well.
Thank God. How did he get in? We watched the house all night. Your theory must be wrong. He can change into something else. He must be able to. How else could he have got in?
I wish I knew.
Madam's sleeping now, sir.
She mustn't be left.
I'll go up. I'd like to. You stay and rest and have some wine. I'm sure you need both. Gerda, will you fetch another bottle?
Oh, sir, I don't like to. You know what happened last time when I disobeyed Mrs. Homewood's orders?
What do you mean?
Well, sir, Madam told me the other day that I must on no account go down to the cellar.
An idea dawns on Van Helsing. Then he runs to the cellar where he discovers the white coffin. Removing the lid, he finds it empty, then turns to see Dracula at the door. The Count disappears. Then Van Helsing puts his silver cross in the coffin before running to the door and finding it locked.
Homewood! Homewood! Homewood!
Released from the cellar by Arthur, Van Helsing runs through the house. Van Helsing finds Gerda cowering.
Now, what happened?
You said I must come back to Madame's. I came up here and he looked like the devil.
Now, what happened?
He came in here and he picked Madame up like she was a baby.
Calm yourself, Gerda. Calm yourself. There's only one place he can make for now. His home.
Leaving a distraught Gerda, Arthur and Van Helsing run from the room. Then they're driving a horse-drawn carriage along a road by night, where they discover a body lying on the ground. Van Helsing finds blood.
It's a coach driver. He's been dead about half an hour.
They cover the man's face and get back in the carriage.
Yeah.
You think Dracula killed that coachman?
Well, of course he did. Without a coach, you'd never get home before sunrise. He'd be dead.
But even if he does get home, we
could... He's hiding in the castle vault for years. We'd lose him there.
And Mina?
Van Helsing shoots him an ominous look. Then Dracula's pale features flash past as his carriage speeds towards the frontier barrier. Hearing a noise, the official leaves his office in his dressing gown to find that Dracula's driven through the barrier, snapping it in two.
Oh! Hey!
After his attempts to shout after the culprit dissolve into coughing, the official heads inside. Later, he's repairing the barrier with rope when Arthur's carriage approaches. As his barrier is broken again, his mouth drops open in dismay. Arthur turns to Van Helsing, who's driving the carriage.
It's getting light.
Below the bridge outside his castle, Dracula finishes digging a hole, then picks up Mina, who's lying motionless on the ground nearby. After dropping her into the hole, Dracula shovels in soil on top of Mina, waking her up. Spade in hand, the Count turns as Van Helsing and Arthur's carriage reaches the bridge.
Whoa! Look!
Arthur points at Dracula, who runs towards the castle. As Arthur rushes to Mina's aid, Van Helsing races across the bridge and into the castle after Dracula. He follows the Count upstairs, then Dracula runs across a room and opens a trap door in the floor. Van Helsing begins to climb the stairs towards Harker's old room, then doubles back through a doorway, catching up with Dracula, who drops the trap door and looks for a weapon. He hurls a candlestick at Van Helsing, who ducks, Then Dracula grabs him around the throat. Wrestling the doctor to the ground, Dracula tightens his grip. Then Van Helsing stops struggling and his eyelids close. Dracula draws back, then leans towards Van Helsing's neck, baring his teeth with a malignant grin. Van Helsing's eyes snap open and he throws the count off him. Then the two men stand facing each other. Dracula advances towards Van Helsing, who backs away, rubbing his neck. Then the doctor notices a chink of sunlight between curtains over a nearby window. Suddenly, he runs towards the window over a table and rips down the curtains, flooding the room with sunlight. Dracula dives for cover under the table, but his leg is caught in the light and turns to ash. Van Helsing grabs two candlesticks and holds them together to form a cross, then advances on the stricken count. Dracula's flailing hand is caught in the sunlight and turns to ash as Van Helsing bears down on him. Repelled by the makeshift cross, the count falls backwards, exposing his face to the full force of the incoming sunlight. As Van Helsing looks on, Dracula draws his remaining hand down over his diminishing features until they too have turned to ashes. As the Count's body collapses beneath his clothes, the cross-shaped mark on Mina's palm disappears while she sits in the castle grounds, being comforted by Arthur. They turn and look towards the castle, as wisps of hair and ashes are blown across the floor inside. Standing by the window, Van Helsing turns and walks towards the remains of the vanquished count, running his hand through his hair. A sudden gust of wind catches a hand-shaped pile of ashes, dispersing them across the floor, until only Dracula's signet ring remains.